Robert Rich, January 16, 1970.
Why don't I ask you first, when you were born and where?
I was born in Tremont, this town.
Yeah.
1915, February 33rd. February 3rd, 1915.
Mm-hmm. That makes you, what, 2 years younger than your brother?
Yeah. Two years and a little over. Uh-huh. 54.
Mm-hmm. And your father was building then?
Oh, yeah. Father's, has always been a boat builder.
Mm-hmm.
And a house cabinet.
Mm-hmm. You do them on and off, one and the
yeah,
other?
Yeah, usually they built boats in the wintertime, house cabinet in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's done both year-round, as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
When one was slack, he'd do the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because he learned through his father, who was a boat builder, mm-hmm. vessel builder in
a vessel builder.
Days.
Uh-huh. Were there many sloops built around here? Back
oh, yeah.
in your grandfather's time?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them.
What kind were they?
I don't know. I don't know
mm-hmm.
what they were, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were copies of other boats or something designed locally or not, but I think mainly they were custom-built boats
mm-hmm.
to suit the particular owner's needs.
Mm-hmm.
They never had any class or special name to them that I know. And when I say a lot of them, I perhaps don't mean that. There were many, but I don't know how many. I've heard my father tell of building them.
Mm-hmm. Were they double-ended, perhaps? Or?
No, they. I don't think they ever built double-ended ones here. To my knowledge, they were all square-stern boats.
Mm-hmm. Sailing boats.
Sailing boats,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Anyway, did your father learn from his father?
Yes.
Did he go to work for him when he was a young man?
Yes, when my grandfather was young, he started it. They were... I don't know what his real business was other than he went to sea. He was a sea captain.
Mm-hmm.
And what they usually did at the time my father was old enough to work for him, they'd build vessels. They built these vessels in the neighborhood of 60 to 80 feet, small coasters.
Mm-hmm.
They'd build them in the wintertime, sail them the next summer.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they'd carry ice to, well... some of these southern islands, Cuba,
mm-hmm.
Down that way. They'd load in Bangor, Ellsworth, ice and lumber. Ice was a big thing in
mm-hmm.
those days.
Mm-hmm.
They would sail them the next summer. I'm speaking strictly now of my father's family.
Mm-hmm.
They'd sail them in the summertime, and then usually in that fall, they'd sell them.
Mm-hmm.
Sell another one.
Sell them down south?
I don't know where, but I guess anywhere locally is... because there was a big demand for those small coasters in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would build another one the following winter and do the same thing
mm-hmm.
over again. Lumber, by the way, was a big thing. They carried a lot of lumber.
Mm-hmm.
Maine shipped a lot of lumber to Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
My father made many trips down to Hull, mm-hmm. Massachusetts, from Machias and Eastport.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like my grandfather. He was... coming out of Callis and carried wood to the lime kiln down in Rockland.
Yeah.
And I guess he also carried other things.
Yeah.
Including a little whiskey at one time.
Yeah.
Well, so then you come from rather long line of
builders.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. How much before that, I don't know. That's far back, so I know my grandfather had several brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They all worked together.
They were the Coos Cove?
They... family? I don't know. They lived around the town of Tremont here, and I don't know just where. My
mm-hmm.
grandfather lived right up the head of the harbor up in the
mm-hmm.
In the Elvin Walls house now it is.
Mm-hmm.
That was his home for many years. And years ago, they lived what they call a rich town
yeah.
here, the Duck
yeah.
Cove.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
Bought some rabbits once when I fell there.
My father actually lived there for quite a while, too, when he was a boy.
Well, when you were born, you were born right up.
I was born just half a mile up here. Not in my father's house. It was in another house. My father's house was built the year I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born just a few hundred yards from that in another house.
Mm-hmm. Did he have his own boat shop right there next to his house?
No, he built in his father's place, which is the Elvin Walls homestead now, mm-hmm. in a barn there, which is close to the shore.
Yeah.
He built there for a while, and because he worked out a lot. Now, there was a shipyard up in the head of the cove up here. They used to build some fairly big boats up there, 80, 70, 80 footers. My father used to work there a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then he owned this shop for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you when, but I was approximately 5, 6, 7, 8 years old
mm-hmm.
when he bought it. And he had it for quite a few years, up until the 30s, I think. About the first of the 30s, I think mm-hmm. he sold it along there. I'm not certain of this mm-hmm. now, but...
Who did he sell it to?
Well, he sold it to a local fisherman who was a dragger. He owned a large boat and he used it mostly for storage for equipment
mm-hmm.
and to mend nets in. They made kind of a sail loft out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And boat building was on the decline then. It was pretty poor. There was very little doing
mm-hmm.
for several years. And my father then moved up to where he is. Didn't move up. He lived there, but he built a shop up there, which my mm-hmm. boy has now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been rebuilt, added onto and taken off again.
Yeah.
It doesn't resemble it. It was a lot bigger shop than that original.
Uh-huh.
And he built a lot of boats there for
mm-hmm.
a good many years. In fact, I worked for him up there.
Mm-hmm. This is where Chummy is.
Yeah, where Chummy is, yeah.
And
then in 1939, I bought this from this fisherman. That
mm-hmm. So passed out of the family back in again.
Right.
Well, it was a coal wharf at one time.
It was originally a coal dock.
Before your father had it.
Before my father had it, yeah.
And he reboarded it.
Yeah, it used to be slanted walled
mm-hmm.
And a stud outside, and he straightened the walls up and boarded it outside and shingled it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can remember of shingling on it with him. I was a little kid, but
mm-hmm.
he let us play around at it.
Listen, well, you started just like I did. I just worked with your father on all those things. What did you start building with your father?
I actually went to work with my father. Other than working Saturdays like sandpapering and painting and stuff when we was kids, I've done that all my life.
Yeah.
Help what we could. But I actually went to work for him in about, I think it was... 14 or 15 years old, which would have made it back 1930.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I worked for him off and on, perhaps on all. We'd work school vacations. I was in school then.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd work all summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturdays, vacations, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. What were the first things you used to do? What kind of jobs did you do at first?
Well, just helping. Sandpapering, planing, and painting.
Mm-hmm. On the other end of a plank?
Helping to plank boats, hold them up,
mm-hmm.
whatever. You could clinch nails. You used to be clinch nail fastened then.
Uh-huh.
So that was always a job for one of us kids inside to hold clinching iron.
Mm-hmm.
And... then I might add, at that same time too, I used to do, shortly after that, not at the same time, shortly after that, I started doing a lot of repair jobs for the local fishermen,
mm-hmm.
Nights after school, Saturdays, weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do that on my own.
Mm-hmm. You weren't working for your father?
I did that on my own. A lot of minor repairs, real big ones, but anything that you could do with a boat afloat or
mm-hmm.
maybe during... grounded out during one tide. I used to do considerable of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever think of being anything else besides boat
building? In 19... 31, I decided I wanted to go lobstering. I bought a boat, a gang of traps, and went lobstering for 3 years.
How'd you like it?
I nearly went broke and sold out.
Well, you have lobster, though, so you
oh, yeah. Well,
know what you want.
In the meantime, slack spells in that, I went fishing, dragging, scallop dragging and flounder dragging mm-hmm. with several different men around here. I did that a lot for before I went on my own, mm-hmm. before I went lobstering on my own, and afterwards I'd go winters, mm-hmm. Several winters. I quit school when I was 18, I guess.
18.
And I quit school when I was 17. I went fishing 3 or 4 or 5 winters, scallop fishing, dragging.
So I guess you had the experience of both of them. It's like my
yeah,
father.
I had quite a lot of fishing experience, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought for a while I wanted to be a fisherman, but I found that I wasn't a good fisherman.
Mm-hmm. Was there always a place in your father's shop waiting for you?
Usually.
Uh-huh.
Usually.
Sometimes yeah. He didn't have work and he was working over at the shipyard.
Well... If I can get the event straight here now. I went fishing from about 33 or 4 or 5 up to about 33 or 4 or 5. Went fishing and worked for my father off and on in between slack spells because fishing in the wintertime you get out a couple of days a week if you're lucky, sometimes a couple of days a month.
Yeah.
And we'd work for him. Then in 1936, I went to Millbridge to work in a boatyard mm-hmm. for Roger Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And I worked there 1 year, then came back to Southwest Boat Corporation and worked 2 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 39, I bought this place. In 42, I went back to Southwest Boat and was foreman of their government contracts.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
had 800 boats to build for the government then.
Oh, yeah.
I took charge of those and kept this shop going with one man, two men, mm-hmm. whatever I could get,
yeah.
just doing minor repair jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I also worked nights and Sundays here myself, but that was my main job until 45, and then I came back here again.
Yeah. So you started this shop on your own in 39.
In 39.
But had you've been working for wages previous to that?
Right.
Yeah. So you began on your own.
Yeah.
Here.
Right.
Now you spent a year in Millbridge and you spent Millbridge and a couple of years at Southwest Boat before mm-hmm. 1939.
Right.
Yeah. Ask this way. Where did you learn carving the half round model? From mostly from your father, from the Millbridge, or where? You just
probably up? Mostly from my father, although I learned a lot about design work from Roger Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
who he was building boats for Howard Chappelle at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think two boats, building the Pinky and another one that Howard Chappelle designed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Roger was a very good man on blueprints.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very willing to show me all he could, too, and I learned quite a lot from him. Then
did he teach you drafting on board?
No, he didn't do that. I picked a lot of that up myself as I went along and practiced on it. And then in 37, when I went to Southwest Boat Corporation, Lennox Sargent, the owner of that, and he was an architect, naval architect, and a very good one at that. And
Bing,
he and I got along very good, and I did a lot of drafting work with him
mm-hmm.
and probably learned more about it from him than anybody else, but in all the time I was still doing it on my own.
Yeah. Can you design both ways? Can you design by carving a half round or design strictly on paper?
Strictly on paper, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I do either way, but I can do it all on paper.
Uh-huh. Which way do you prefer?
I like to work from a half model.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
probably because I haven't had experience enough designing without it. Mm-hmm. It's easier to see what I'm doing working the half model.
Mm-hmm.
Many times now, I'll design a boat strictly on paper. Now I get worried about it and make a half model, see if mm-hmm. it looks right. From the design,
yeah,
I go backwards.
Yeah, yeah. So you're still tied pretty well to the half round and prefer it that way.
Well, I do. Especially
the word
if
tie doesn't sound right. You prefer to work with.
Yeah, if it's a boat, especially a little bigger or a little different than something that I'm accustomed to.
Yeah.
I'd rather work from a half model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, then let me ask you this: how much of your present half round, or your present lobster hull that you build, would you say comes from your father? Is there any aspects of the hull which you would say which were very much like the boats he built? Not now. Uh-huh.
The first ones I built were almost a copy of his.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the first two boats that I built were from his model.
Mm-hmm. You borrowed his model?
I borrowed his models.
Yeah.
And he worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Actually. Then I see where there should be changes made, and I started making my own models, designing my own.
Mm-hmm. And you were supposed to, you were clear to, I suppose. He didn't have any objection.
Oh, no. About that time, I think people were beginning to, the fishermen, because all we built was right on the start, mainly was fish boats, so I guess once in a while a small pleasure boat, but the fishermen at that time were beginning to change their views a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to wider boats,
mm-hmm.
And also they were using bigger engines, required bigger propellers, they had to build the boats deeper.
Mm-hmm.
The models had to be changed to keep up with the times, actually.
Mm-hmm. So this was just during the war, was it?
This started mainly during the war and shortly after.
Yeah. So that was when the break occurred, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Were there still many? What were the sterns like in the vessels? The first ones you built, round stern or square?
Square. They were.
Your father made that innovation.
Yeah, I built all practically all square stern boats of my own design. I built. I guess two or three double-enders of a Peapod, whatever you want to call them, other designs.
Uh-huh. Other people's designs.
Yeah. Well, for instance, one that Malcolm McDuffie had, that West Coast design boat.
Yeah, I've seen
a double-ender. I built that.
You did. Mm-hmm.
And I built several of the fantail. Well, these tugboats were all that way, of course.
Yeah.
They have
the like that Merle Black's boat across the
river. Yeah.
Well, that reminds me. He said his father owned a boat which was built in 1915, same year you were born. His boat was built in 1913 out by a fellow named, you told me the fellow's name, out in Atlantic.
Swan's Island?
Yeah, and his father had a boat built 2 years later. Didn't say where or when. But that's still alive, too. It is.
It was built in Friendship.
In Friendship.
Yeah, I think uh-huh. my father went over with him and got it.
Hmm.
Or went over and got it for him. I'm not sure of that.
Well,
yeah, I think that boat's still going.
Uh-huh. I'm interested. There's an old boat over in Somme Sound, over at Foy Stanley's place, where he used to be. You know, there's a house there. Used to be a house for people who were on the town. And they finally towed that down about 5 years ago, I guess. And somebody just last year bought that old hull and hauled it over at Otter Creek, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's where it is. I'm going to see if I can chase it now. I got some good pictures of this one over here. And it also had a good conversation with Merle Black.
Interesting.
Well, this leads me to... you have told me before some very interesting information about the development of the lobster boat hull around here, from your memory, things you've seen. Now, how did it start out? What was it like at first? And what were the stages it went through? And if you can, I'd be interested in why changes were made.
Well, I think the biggest changes started in the 40s, during wartime shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
They were beginning then, as I say, to use bigger engines in their boats.
Yep.
They were after more speed.
Mm-hmm. When you say bigger engines, I mean, what were they starting with?
Well, back in the 40s, most of these lobster boat engines around here were 35 to 50 horsepower
uh-huh.
Kermit's Red Wings,
uh-huh.
slow-turning, heavy-duty engines.
These strictly marine engines?
Marine engines.
Uh-huh.
Then, of course, shortly after the war, many companies that were making engines for the government turned over to industrial and marine use,
mm-hmm.
Using automotive blocks,
yeah.
which gave you a lot more horsepower,
mm-hmm.
faster turning engines, and they would use them on reduction gears. I'm leading up to the point why we had to deepen the boats, because they had to swing bigger propellers, so therefore you had to build your boats deeper to allow for it.
Yes.
That was the beginning of the change, plus the fact that lobstering was beginning to pick up then to be a lot better than it ever was before. Therefore, they were fishing harder, more traps. They had to have bulkier and bigger boats.
Mm-hmm.
They jumped quickly from, 28 to 30-foot boats, which was very common. Then they stayed right up to 33, 35, and 38-foot boats,
mm-hmm.
which they pretty much held to right up to this day. 33 to 38 is a good average length.
Yeah.
But as the time went on, as well as building them deeper and maybe straightening the run out aft better for more speed and so forth, they all figured we'll build them wider. They can carry more traps on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're steadier to work out of.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, that was overdone.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, they started going wider. Most of our boats at that time, on a 33 to a 35-foot boat, would be 9 feet wide. That seemed to be just a good, happy average they all wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Then we went right up to 10, 10 and a half, and 11.
Mm-hmm. This is in recent?
Well, that started in right shortly after the war,
mm-hmm.
mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Gradually at first, but then
did it meet any kind of resistance, or did they actually demand it?
I think they demanded it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the builders, as a rule, thought they were better boats. I still don't think they were,
mm-hmm.
except that it gave them more room.
Yeah.
They were getting a bigger boat without going longer.
Uh-huh. What were they losing by doing that?
they were harder driving boats, because all these boats are strictly displacement boats. They're going
yes.
by main strength and stupidness.
Yes.
but they were putting in bigger engines to offset it.
Yeah. But so they actually became more expensive to run then?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. They could afford it, I suppose.
They could afford it, because business was better.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So you make a change here, and you gain something here, and you lose it there.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's gradually gone. In some localities, like Jonesport, speed is all essential.
Mm-hmm.
This way, you don't get it. You go perhaps to some other place, you find the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You mean the same thing as here?
You may find another place like Jonesport. They want
uh-huh.
they want light built boats that'll go fast.
Mm-hmm.
The fishermen here don't care for that. They don't have too far to go. Well, Jonesport
uh-huh.
doesn't either, but
mm-hmm.
they like to race in the harbor. They don't race when they get outside. They race just in the harbor where people can watch them.
Mm-hmm. I can't believe it, yeah. If a fellow around here wants a fast boat, what does he do?
We can build it,
mm-hmm.
if they want it. We do, once in a while. Once in a great while, somebody will call for it. They want a light-built boat that'll go faster. They don't care about the heavier construction.
Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Do you change the model?
Lighten your construction, mainly. That's your biggest item right there,
yeah.
Is to build them lighter. That's mm-hmm. the whole secret, get the boat going, to go. Because
mm-hmm.
if you put power enough in almost anything, if it isn't too heavy, it'll go.
Mm-hmm.
If it'll lighten its displacement, come out of water a little bit, it'll go. Well, that's
mm-hmm.
the reason with these boats that we normally build, that's a heavy, they won't lighten their displacement when they're going. You're driving them through the water instead of over it.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever changed the model much for a man who wants a fast boat?
Oh, yes. You fay your run out aft usually a little more, make a flatter, straighter run, which will give you more speed, but it's not as good a working boat.
Mm-hmm. Why, is it spanked too much out?
Yeah, and they're not so good in the following sea, mm-hmm. which these fishermen here figure a lot about. Our prevailing winds are southwest here. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess they figure coming back is the worst part. You're coming mm-hmm. back with the wind.
Yeah.
When they're coming in, especially
and
from offshore fishing.
The breeze is stiffer in the afternoon, usually, isn't it?
Usually, yeah. And a following sea, a boat that'll steer good in the following sea is pretty much a must for the local boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some places they don't give that a thought. Some places they do.
They don't mind sliding around.
Depends on where they are.
Uh-huh. I suppose once an idea gets ingrained, once you find out that you can build a boat, that boats can be bought, which steer well in the following sea. You don't want to give that up.
That's right. That's right. And it is awful hard to get everything in a little boat or a big boat at two, as mm-hmm. that goes. It never's been done yet. You can't get one perfect for all things.
Yeah.
But you, among fishermen, you never find two that agree. What mm-hmm. is good for a fisherman in this harbor isn't worth a nickel for a fisherman somewhere else. They don't want it.
Hmm. But you get that in the same harbor, two men in the same harbor?
Not much the same harbor, no. You'll find in this harbor 90% of the fishermen all feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
It happens this harbor and southwest harbor seems to be pretty much alike.
Yeah.
Jonesport, because they wouldn't take one of our boats to get, they don't go fast enough.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
They'd rather have one built light and buy a new one every 4 years rather than have one built to last and a better working boat.
Mm-hmm.
A heavy boat's a more comfortable working boat.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want that. They want something to go like hell.
Sure. So they'll sacrifice.
They'll sacrifice anything to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really funny. I don't know why they do that.
But they're clannish. Fishermen are very clannish that way. That'll be... For instance, in this harbor, almost every lobster boat in this harbor, the engine is in the cabin.
Yes. Forward of the bulkhead.
Forward of the bulkhead. That's all they want the cabin for, is to cover their engines, keep their equipment in, so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Many places you go to, they laugh. They want the engine back in the cockpit floor, and they haul their parts in on it, and the water runs down over the engine's right out in the open, they stumble over it. They don't seem to know the difference. Apparently the first boat came there was that way, so they copied it.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're a creature of habit as well as being clannish too, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps most of us are.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite interesting. I was wondering how this worked. Why an idea which may not be an efficient idea?
Well, I can pretty much prove this. I built a lot of lobster boats that went down around Scituate, Brant Rock, Green Harbor,
mm-hmm.
Massachusetts, down that way. Yeah. The boats that they had originally down there mostly were small Nova Scotia boats.
Mm-hmm.
The motors sat back in the cockpit. They couldn't get from one side to the other without walking out around it or stepping up over it, and the engine box was always leaking, the water running down.
Mm-hmm.
One fellow here that started the whole thing came up here much as 15 years ago and bought a boat that I had built for a man here who sold it and had a larger one built later.
Mm-hmm.
That fellow bought that boat, took it down there, and within 10 years, every boat down there was just like that one. I built the most of them.
I'll be darned. The idea
from... In the beginning, even this man himself said he didn't think he liked that arrangement with the engine down the cabin that way. But he couldn't get any reason why. I said, well, what do you want the cabin for other than that? Well, he didn't know. He said, you make the cabin shorter and leave the engine outside. And I says, well, why not leave the engine where it is and build the cabin back over it and have it protection? You haven't got any room there anyway.
Yeah.
Well, through the process of arguing and trying to explain, he bought the boat anyway because he wanted a boat. But I'm going to say within 10 years, every boat down that way, practically every boat down that way, was from my design or similar. I didn't build all of them, but they were all built that same idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you go down there now, you'll find a whole bunch of main fish boats. Looks like Bass Harbor.
So once in a while, an idea, a good idea like that will take.
Another place that it took, my father changed it years ago, was in Cape Pappas.
Mm-hmm.
They were the same way, and he built one or two boats that went over there. In a very short time, they were all built that way. Whether my father built them or somewhere or somebody else, but they found that was actually the best arrangement.
Very good. So not only does the fisherman make demands on a builder, but a builder can also make suggestions to the fisherman.
He can sway them a little, quite a little, if he wants to.
Well, I remember you mentioned before this instance of the watertight cockpit, the influence on people around here with that. They pretty well bought that idea now, haven't they?
Yeah, I don't know when that started. The first two or three boats that I built didn't have watertight cockpits, self-bailing cockpits. But it started very shortly. I hadn't built many before I was asked to do that. And of course, that then meant building your boats higher sided.
Yeah.
Which?
Exactly why is that? I mean, couldn't you build your cockpit and still have your low freeboard too?
No. Here's another thing. Brings back what I said. Fishermen are clannish. And there's some points in it. Years ago, the lobster boats were low sided. They didn't have self-bailing cockpit floors.
Yeah.
Of course, too, bear in mind the fact the lower you are down the water, the better the boat feels, too. It's
sure.
Like if you stand up on top of that mast, you're getting a hell of a motion.
Yeah.
Where down in the water, you're not.
Yeah.
Well, most of the boats in those days, they all had figured that the cockpit combing had to come so that your knees would just go under it, see, like there.
Yeah, yeah, right above the kneecap.
You could lean against it, and you could lean over the rail, and you could wash your hands and wash your bait pockets and whatnot in the water.
Yeah.
And you had a good feeling not falling overboard.
Yeah.
Well, of course, when they come to get self-bailing cockpit floors, they still wanted that same knee room.
Yeah.
Because they'd always had it.
Yeah.
It didn't mean much, but they'd always had it. They felt they had to have it.
As far as the comfort of its design.
Yeah, you bring your floor up 6 inches, 8 inches above the water, you had to build your boat up 8 inches high and offset it.
Sure.
Well, then, they have gone backwards a little bit on that now, because most everybody now has a pump, auxiliary pump or something. They have a barrel of water. They pump the water instead of reaching out over the side for everything. They got it in the barrel right there,
yeah,
all along.
Yeah.
Warm water or whatnot, as they want it in the wintertime.
Sure.
So now, actually, we have gone back to lower-sided boats again. Maybe their knees come up on the combing, but they don't stand there anymore.
Yes.
Everything's done with a hydraulic hollow. They don't have to pull a trap in over the side, lean out to get it, same as they did before, pull right up, so they can just grab it and break it in over.
In fact, it's an advantage to have a lower freeboard then.
Yeah, it is.
Unless you have to have an extra high knee.
Yeah. Well, they've modernized a little bit and come up to make things more handy, more convenient. But I don't think in the last 15 years lots of boats have made any changes at all.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases...
That's here, that's here.
That's, most places.
Most places.
To my knowledge. They've all settled on the idea that a 33 to a 36, once in a while 38-foot boat, is the ideal lobster boat.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them started out with bigger boats, then they worked back again. And even when they use two-man boats today, you seldom see a 40-foot lobster boat. Most of them are under 40 feet.
Yeah.
And the single-man boats, 33 to 35 feet is the most common size boat.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the reasons why they prefer that size? That's a complex question.
Well, I don't really know, except that the 33-foot boat, we'll say for an example, is big enough to carry about all the gear that they need to carry. It's not too big if they want to ground it out and paint it on the beach themselves. They can do it in one tide, paint the bottom. It's not too big to clean and all that. It doesn't require quite as big an engine as a bigger boat would, which helps a little bit. Plus the fact that with a one-man boat, if your boat is too big, you've got a lot more walking to do, too, in a day.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how much walking a fisherman does in a boat in a day. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them found that, that was in my mind a while ago, telling about getting them too wide. They started going wide.
Mm-hmm.
They have finally settled on the idea that you can get a boat too wide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you set a bait tub here, and if your boat's real wide, your boat rolling, that's a heck of a lot more angled than being a little boat.
Yeah, that's right.
And your bait tub slide back and forth more. It's more walking from side to side, which you have to do one reason or another.
Yeah. Do fellas often haul on the port side? They have the nigger here to the port side and haul there? And their helm on the starboard?
Yeah, most common is the starboard side,
uh-huh.
Although there's quite a few that do go on the port. what started. Now, that's a matter of...
Matter of choice, I see.
Habit or choice.
Uh-huh. In other words, but they have the helm to port then?
Yeah.
They have all the gear.
Work everything on the right side.
Yeah, I see. So if they had all the gear, that is all the helm and their winch and their davit and everything on the starboard side, then they have their, opening down to the bulkhead.
Gangway. On the port side.
Right, on the port side. Sometimes you'd arrange them the other way around.
Yeah, once in a while you do. Yeah.
So in other words, would you tailor make a boat above the hull for an individual buyer? In other words, like a superstructure or not?
Yeah.
What are the critical factors? What are the various measurements which are most important?
Well, I don't.
Now you mentioned, where the Coleman hits his knee.
Yeah. One thing that most of them require is that they can see through the windshield seat and not have too high a cabin. That's why you seldom see headroom in the cabin of a loft boat.
Yeah.
They want it so that looking through the windshield, they can look out over the cabin and almost see the bow of the boat, so that when they're running up to pick up part boys, it doesn't get out of sight on them too quick. They see it was pretty close to the boat, so they know just when to reach out and gas it,
mm-hmm.
or they know how close they're coming to it.
Yeah.
One with a great high cabin, you lose sight of it long before it gets to your boat.
Sure.
You'll see one once in a while that way today, but most of them, they won't have that at all. They'll sacrifice headroom, because all the cabin is an engine box and to cover...
And a place to have the coal, too.
Yeah, equipment and stuff in.
Yeah.
And even though they may have a bunk there in case they want to stay overnight in the summertime or something,
mm-hmm.
headroom is minor. They're only spending very little time down there anyway, so they don't pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. There's no other real specific measurements that they're interested in, except the height of your cockpit floor. Now, most of them pay very little attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
It averages about 20 inches. Some will want 22, some don't care if it's only 18.
From the
bottom of your combing to your cockpit floor.
Yeah.
In other words, knee room, we call it, from under your combing down to your floor. They used to, as I said a while ago, that used to be very important to the most of them. Most of them now don't care much what it is.
Mm-hmm.
They all require a certain length of... they try to get, if they build a 20-foot boat, they try to get the same length cockpit floor as you do in a 30-foot boat. But the average, they all want to go from 11 to 14 feet on a 33-foot boat.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you put your bulkhead nearly the center of your boat.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that. Sometimes you have to vary it depending on the heft of the engine they're going to use.
Yeah.
A lot of them are going to diesel engines today, so you've got to hold your engine aft a little more, otherwise you get your boat belted.
Yeah.
Therefore, you bring your kit with your bulkhead.
But if you have a lighter or a gasoline engine, say, you put the aft end of the engine at the midship point of the boat?
Usually, yeah.
About.
Pretty close.
Yeah. Is the angle of the propeller shaft involved with that? In other words...
Doesn't make much difference today. Any of them will stand from nothing up to 15 degrees, and
mm-hmm.
the average angle on one of these is about 7 or 8 degrees, so,
mm-hmm.
so it's a good happy medium anyway, and you can change it a lot either way. Doesn't affect it any.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, let's see. I've got some questions written down for moments like this. All right, well then, we've been leading up to something then. What are the basic characteristics that a lobster boat around here has to fulfill? In other words, what are the things that you consider and the in building it and the lobster may consider when they're buying it? Such things as safety, comfort. Can you give me a list of the
basic few things? Basic things? They want a boat as easy to drive head to, chop or sea, as possible, which a thin, narrow boat drives easier to it. They want them to drive as easy as it can without getting them so thin that they won't hold up good in the following sea. If you get them too sharp forward, they'll have a tendency to run to the head and root.
Yes.
So they want a boat, what we, in fishermen's term, a boat builder's term, medium full forward.
Yeah.
In other words, on the water line and under the water line.
Yeah, so she'll lift...
Lift.
A bit, but not too much.
But not too much to come down the bank hard.
Yeah.
Another thing that lobstermen require is a boat that turns short.
Yeah.
For maneuvering in among lobster pots.
Mm-hmm.
How
do you
achieve
that?
And good visibility out of your windshield. Those are about the main things.
Okay. Well, then, now, here comes the ace question. To achieve maneuverability, what do you have to do to the hull?
Well, I don't know if I can ask you or not.
What do you customarily do at this point?
Well, it's something you learn to do through experience.
Well, for example, if you can give me an idea, those sections of the hull that are involved, you know, like the forefoot, the run,
the forefoot wants to be reasonably show. So it'll turn good.
All right.
That's one thing. Not too shoal, because then a lot of fishermen complain the boats, if they come up into the wind to pick up a trap, they're too shoal forward, they blow off quick.
Yes.
The deeper the boat, the more lay right there for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But then you get them too deep and they don't steer good again.
Yeah.
So,
it's sort of a rocker type idea.
Yeah, medium shoal forward.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the size of your rudder mm-hmm. has a lot of bearing on it. The distance your rudder is from your propeller, the distance the rudder is from the stern of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one thing we have to contend with is hard. The farther your propeller comes ahead, because it's up in your boat, you've got to make it deeper to get the clearance.
Yeah.
So the farther aft you go, the more clearance you've got for a propeller, but your rudder's got to be back of your propeller, so you got to look out and not get it too close to the transom. They don't steer so good.
Yeah, you have to turn too much.
That's
too
right.
Much length.
A powerboat, a properly designed powerboat, you watch one sometime,
mm-hmm.
when they're turning, they're running along like this. I think maybe I can do it better. I can do it better right on here with a pencil.
Right.
Here's your powerboat. Well, like these flat bottom speedboats and so forth, or a punt.
Yeah.
You turn your rudder, and they're going ahead, but the stern goes off like this. That's the way they turn. See,
yes.
They slide up.
Yeah.
A good turning powerboat, you might not believe this, but it's fact. You can start out, turn the rudder across, the stern turns a little, but the bow actually swings right over, too, like that.
Hmm.
Now, why that is, with that rudder going across on your boat like that and the water hitting it, it has a tendency to break the boat around.
Yes.
You watch your boat, the water from the flow of the stem.
Mm-hmm.
The minute they start them ahead and turn the rudder, you see the water, the hollow place right in here.
Smooth, bubbly water right in
right. there. Right. The boat actually swivels from the middle of them.
Yeah.
Like that. Not from the middle. It's after the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It probably your rudder's here. They'll actually go like this. So instead of going out around a big circle like
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
your boat is actually pivoting right here.
That's very
That's
good.
A sign of a good turning lobster boat when you
uh-huh.
see that.
Uh-huh. Very good.
And a good one will do it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to the point that they'll almost turn without going ahead a bit. They'll almost start
mm-hmm.
out and almost turn just like that without going ahead.
That must be a dream to see. Yeah.
Well,
that must be good.
When a fisherman gets one, after he's had a boat that doesn't turn good, then he gets one that does, he is some pleased.
Yeah, I'd say. Probably.
He's some pleased.
I shouldn't imagine you want to give it up, isn't it?
Here's the reason for that. They're running up, the boat's running up here, pick up a lobster buoy.
Yeah.
All right. They run up and they've missed it. For some reason or other, a big sea hits them, it blows them off or knocks them off quick. They reach out and they miss it. So they run up by. With a good turning boat, they just keep right on going, right up by, and they can swing right straight around, come right back down around, pick it up and head right into the wind again quick like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
If the boat doesn't turn good, they got to make a great big circle and come back or turn around the opposite way and come up straight onto it again.
Yeah.
Where a good turning boat, they can be... Here's the buoy right here. Here's the boat here. They're just too far to reach it. But a pivoting boat, they can pivot them right around right into it, see?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Or if they get by it, they can pivot them, come right around. They can pick it up side too. And if the wind is blowing on this way, they don't want to keep hauling that way. They just keep leaving them right in gear, and the boat will pivot right around that buoy, and they can pick it right up on the return again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a...
Very nice.
A lobster fisherman will tell you that will save him In other words, he can haul about 25 traps more a day on a good maneuvering boat than he can one that doesn't on a blowy day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've heard a lot. I heard this Gordon Roberts say that down there in this boat that he's got now. I built it, but I built a lot of that same style, so I know they were good turning boats.
Yeah.
But he made that remark once that he could haul 25 traps more a day in that boat than he could in his other one, just because she turned so much.
That's worth it to him.
Yeah.
Well, okay, you've got maneuverability. Now, speed, I suppose, is a factor. Less so around here, though, isn't it?
Speed isn't a factor. It isn't a factor in any case, in most lobster boats. The most of them, of the fast boats, they don't go fast when they're outside. They all go 9 to 12 knot, which is very slow, really.
Yeah.
These fast ones, like Jonesporters, that's the way they go outside. That's the way they go from trap to trap. They get in the harbor, at mouth of the harbor, then they open them wide open and go like hell out the harbor.
And watch out everybody's pier on the way.
I'll give you a good story of that. I was down there, I think it was 2 years ago, and I was anchored right under the Jonesport Bridge, just the other side of the Jonesport Bridge. I wasn't anchored, I was in a mooring. There's a few lobster boats in there. There was one or two. There was one double-ender. Now we're back to that, too. An old fella had it there. But the most of the boats were down below the other side, this side of the bridge, actually west side of the bridge in the harbor, part of the harbor there.
Yeah.
But going out that morning, they were going eastward, so they went under the bridge. And this was just shortly after daylight in the morning. I had got up, and there'd been one or two boats go out by, and I'd heard them. They were moderate, but I wanted to watch the boats, so I got up to watch them.
Yeah.
Stood out in the cockpit floor, and this particular one coming was just coming up under the bridge, just a good job. But I see him, he'd look out around, he's looking right toward me, and about that time he crammed a wide open, swung in close to me.
Oh.
And he went by, and it rolled my wife out of the bunk, and it goddamn near swamped us. And about that time, the old fellow, that just getting underway, because he had a hard job too. It was a small boat, but he had to hang on, pull the cam down again. And he come up alongside of me and slowed right down, pulled her out of gear. He said, look, you learn if you stick around here. He said, don't look at them fellas. They won't do that if you don't look at them.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. There you have it.
And I thought he was joking. He says, no. He says, that guy didn't open that boat up till he saw you was looking at him.
Yeah.
He said, if you hadn't looked at him, he'd gone by same as he should have. And that's very true.
Yeah.
You hear a lot of folks say that about Jones Force. They have. There's other places that they're the same way, too. But that's the worst place in the country right there for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you just pull up to a stoplight next to somebody, you know, with a gun and engine, you know. And if he'll be looking at you, and if you look at him, you've had it.
That's right.
You know. Yeah. But if you don't look at him, you know.
Well, there used to be a place down here, Long Island, French Barrel. They got that streak here years ago. They had to have the fastest boats there was. They soon got over it. They couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
It cost them a lot of money. It didn't do them any good. They didn't haul any more traps a day than anybody else. The average of these fellows don't go over 8 miles for their traps. Well, you realize a boat going 8 knot, even from difference 8 to 12, from here to Duck Island, which is 8 miles, that's about as far as they go, you've only got to start 10 minutes sooner to get that same time.
Yeah.
For a lot less money.
Yeah.
A lot less gas.
Sure.
So most of them have got out of this speed. The average lobster boat today is a 10-knot boat. That's the average jog, cruising speed, running speed, is 10-knot. Of course, now all in traps from trap to trap, they're going slower anyway, but they'll spell while the traps are far apart, they'll open them up. But your average lobster boat goes 10-knot.
So speed isn't considered, isn't a factor
at all. Most of them now rather have a slower, heavier, more comfortable boat.
Okay. Well, here's the other another characteristic: comfort. What constitutes comfort?
A heavy boat.
Means she doesn't roll too much.
One that doesn't roll too bad. A heavy boat that doesn't slap you and pound you, jump you quick.
Yeah.
One that motion's easy. Of course, a heavy boat will.
Yeah. Okay. It's not only the weight then; it's the depth of it, isn't it? Or is it
a lot. Effect? The depth has something to do with it. Your weight is your biggest factor, because you can take a board or a log out here, a piece of plank that's heavy, it moves very slower.
There, she's going now. Well, then, get back to this question of comfort. Heavy boat. Build a heavy. Okay. Is there anything you do to the shape of the hull to make it more comfortable?
Not much. Not for my... You don't vary from my standard designs much for that reason.
Okay, well, let's attack it this way. What is there in the standard design which goes toward making comfort?
I don't know how to answer it.
I suppose there are a good many things that are all interrelated.
I'll tell you how you learn it.
Yeah.
Is from listening to the fishermen, mainly. All fishermen don't claim their boat's the best.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of fishermen that are pretty fair-minded about that. If they got a boat that's good, they'll tell you. If it's bad, they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
If you know the man, and he says, this is a good boat, or somebody else has been in it too, and he'll say, gee, that boat's a lot better than mine, then you check that design when you get a chance and see what the difference is.
Yeah.
And you try to incorporate it into your own. I do that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see the fishermen? They come in?
Oh, yeah, for repairs and haul out for paint. And
yeah.
So I do a lot of fishermen's repairs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 40, 50 boats a year. We haul out different ones. So
mm-hmm. Running this car right here beside? Yeah.
So you get a chance to look them all over.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this much, too. Sometimes what you think wouldn't be any good in a boat for the shape in the bottom is a good boat, too.
Hmm.
There are other things that govern it. The length, the width, the heights, the heft, mm-hmm. the placement of your engine, which has a lot to do, the balance of your boat, which that affects, mm-hmm. has a lot to do with the maneuverability of your boat. And sometimes I've hauled boats out here that fishermen say are damn good boats. They may say they're comfortable boats, they're medium-fast boats, or they're quite fast, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it and you say, well, that throws my ideas to hell. But if you figure it and follow it sharp enough, look them over sharp enough, you'll see where you could be wrong. You'll see little things, one lofts at the other, you'll find a reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for given characteristics such as, we'll just take hypothetically, speed and comfort, two different characteristics on a boat.
Yes.
And you may find that the run on the boat is involved both in speed, for the flat of the run, the better the speed.
Yeah.
But also, we can't have it too flat or else you won't be too comfortable. So
that's right. And then again, too, if you have them too flat, it takes more power.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get more speed if you put the power to them. Where the round bottom ones, maybe you can't get it no matter how much power you're
going
to get. In other words, a good architect can tell you, can figure, I can do it. A good architect can pretty near tell you the hull speed
mm-hmm.
of a model.
Given horsepower.
I mean, when I say the hull speed, how much it'll go without forcing it excessively.
Yeah.
In other words, how fast it should go economically and comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you close to looking one. I can tell you through experience.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure it too well, mm-hmm. but I can guess at it.
Yeah. Which may be just as accurate.
It could be just as accurate, too, as fast that goes.
I'm not so sure I trust all these calculations.
Now, the hull speed of most of these lobster boats is from, if you really was out, the way we normally build our lobster boats, mm-hmm. if you really was out front, the hull speed is seldom over 17 or 18 miles an hour, or 18 nautical miles, I might say, on any of them. If you drive them more than that, the spray comes up by the sides of them, they will pound,
mm-hmm.
or they lift up so much they get unstable. They've lost their stability on their bilges, because they're round bilge. A hard chine boat would have those square chines out there to help give them more stability.
It's like Chummy's boat he's building up there.
I have built round bottom boats, put so much power in them, they lift up, go like the devil, but they get going so fast and they flop on the side.
Yeah.
You could turn your rudder a little bit and get them flopped on the other side and they stay.
Mm.
Well, they were going beyond the hull speed.
Yes. And in fact, they started splitting up almost into sub-hulls. if you go over onto one bilge, you're actually on a different hull.
That's right.
In a sense.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're very unstable, unsteady at that speed. Yeah. So,
how do the Jonesporters handle it? Is it the narrowness of the hull that keeps them from flopping?
No. I don't think they drive many of theirs much above the hull speed. When they get up to you hear these boats going 25 miles an hour down there, those lobster boats, they're light. They're very flat. They are a had chine boat with the corners rounded off.
Yes,
a little bit.
I see.
And they go to the point where they have lost their stability, even then, their mm-hmm. good stability. They're all right to use, smooth habit to run a race with, but you wouldn't run them outside if it was bad weather that way. You couldn't. They'd be too uneasy. They'd flop back and forth, too.
Yeah.
Most of them are driving them a little beyond their hull speed, actually, what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
What it really is, I mean, for good maneuverability.
Well, another thing occurs to me, and that's the question of economy. Now, if you build a boat heavy, you're putting more materials into it.
Right.
So a cost goes up.
Then. Slightly.
Slightly. Which is more expensive, labor or materials?
Labor.
Labor.
Yeah.
So I suppose if you had to cut down materials and make them smaller,
well,
more labor
sometimes it doesn't make much difference whether you use it light or heavy,
mm-hmm.
except for a little bit of difference in the labor. Well, let me give you an example. If you're planking a boat with mahogany, you can buy inch mahogany, which is figured at inch.
Mm-hmm.
You buy it 7/8, you pay for inch.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy it 3/4, you pay for inch.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build it out of inch just as cheap as you can the 7/8 or 3/4 on the planking, except when you use the thicker planking, you've got slightly bigger fastenings, usually,
yes.
not always, you should have,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit more work. I wouldn't know how much, maybe a
mm-hmm.
day's more labor for two men
mm-hmm.
In planking the boat or something, because
yeah.
it's a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
If you went from inch up to 4-inch, yeah,
mm-hmm.
you'd see a lot of difference, but then that
sure.
minor difference, the heft of construction is really quite minor in the boat. It doesn't matter whether you build them light or heavy, cost-wise.
It's not too much for a man.
No.
Certainly
no.
the size of what you're dealing
not,
with.
Not unless you went out of proportion, unreasonable
yeah.
on your hefts.
I was noticed Simi Davis is building this Dave fisherman out here. He's 65 feet long. He's got 2-inch or inch and a half plank on it. I suppose when you get plank that heavy.
That is going quite the other way
mm-hmm.
on that boat, yeah.
Got a
right
lot of work.
Yeah.
He's been 11 months on her, I understand. And,
oh, he's been longer than that.
Yeah. Well, quite a big.
Oh, he's
big
this vessel. Is he's this is on his. She was a year ago last September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Year ago last September.
18 months. Well, let's see, 16 months. Well, getting back to the question of economy, lobstermen, how much money are they about limited to on, say, a 34-foot boat now? Do most of them want to buy it?
Well, an average 30 to 34-foot lobster boat today, with a good gasoline engine in it,
mm-hmm.
all equipped, ready to go, will be right in the neighborhood of $12,000.
Mm-hmm.
If they use diesel engines, you go a little more,
mm-hmm.
or a little less if they use a little smaller engine.
Maybe 150 horsepower engine saves?
Yeah, that's an average. You go with a fully equipped boat. That's with everything. Radio, telephone, your hydraulic, all the hydraulic steerer, your trap sheathing on them, and your enclosure shutters and whatnot for your steering shallow.
Mm-hmm.
The really complete boat, you'll go just about $12,000.
Mm-hmm. And now, in the price of that, how much of that is your labor?
Well, let me give you some exact figures. I'll give you one I'll give you one right on it. On a 33-foot lobster boat that happens to be a diesel-powered one, which made the cost... Here's one with the gas engine right here. I got to give it to you two ways first. This was in 1967. That's slightly higher now. I'll give you this for 1967 now. The total labor was $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
The total material was $2,100.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the hull. Now, when you come to your engine and installation,
yeah,
that's all added to that, extra.
Yeah.
To install the engine, you've got an average of $800 labor to install the engine, and you've got an average of $300 to $500 worth of equipment, depending on the
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That is equipment, meaning yeah. the engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides the engine.
Yeah. Well, besides the engine.
Besides the engine.
How much is the engine usually? 154. Horsepower gas.
About $1,600.
Yeah. Then how about for your superstructure above your hull?
No, that's complete.
That's complete.
All the woodwork.
$2,100 includes material for all of it.
Everything. Yeah. All the woodwork necessary and hardware necessary to complete all the woodwork. And in other words, the fastenings, the hinges, and the locks, and the whatnot, the
mm-hmm.
windows.
Mm-hmm. How does that come to $12,000? How does it come up to 12,000?
Well,
let's see.
I'll show you. Oh, on that last one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I got it all on this.
1600, let's see.
Because we used some stuff out of another boat. Let me give it to you. Here, let me give you one that's nearer 15,000, but a diesel engine, that's the difference between
yeah.
12 and 15. I have to get it right here somewhere. Right here. Here's Gordon Robbins' lobster boat. The total hull, the labor, 1,207 hours, $2,732.
Mm-hmm.
The material, 1965. This varies a little from, I don't know, there's another $58, so it's
yeah.
$2,000 there. They'll vary a little from boat to boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's on the hull. In other words, that cost me $47.57, I got $5,500 for it. But that's the actual cost of it. The contract on the hull was for $5,500.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's his labor to install, he had afterwards labor to install the engine, the hoist and his radio, telephone, fathomies, and so forth.
Electrical wiring and all that.
Yeah, that's $1,735 more labor.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, it
yeah.
runs into a lot on your equipment.
Yeah.
Here's his engine, $3,870.
Mm-hmm.
Hardware and fittings. This is stuff that he had. I can't place it now where it went. Probably a pumper. Various things for $281 more, his freight on the engine $32. Now, you add that $5,500, there's $4,300, there is $9,800, call it $10,000. That's
yeah.
$10,000, pretty close right there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that's $10,000. Now, I'll have to do this off of here. Because he furnished a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
A hydraulic steerer is $500.
Mm-hmm.
Radio telephone, $600.
Yeah.
Fathometer, about $300.
Mm-hmm.
His fuel tank is another 250.
The propeller shaft.
Propeller shaft and propeller is another 400. Stuff in boxes and bearings. See, I didn't furnish them because he had them
already
on hand. There's another 200 on that. He had a fresh water. He had a raw water wash down pump. Probably was another $75.
Steering. What about a helm and?
No, that's all. You got another 75.
Hydraulic steering gear. I see.
That's in there, but you got another $75 for clutch controls.
Tack and
that came with the engine, I think.
Throttle and all. How about running gear, like
running lights? You got another $50 worth of running lights.
Yeah. How about an anchor and chain rope?
Anchor and chain rope. I don't know what that would go, but call it $100. Put it cheap.
Yeah.
We're getting up there now.
Yeah, you are, I see.
Well, what do we got here? There's 5, 10, 20, 25, 30, 35, 90, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Well, that's 2,500. We were up to...
Yeah, you were up to 10,000. So
we were up to 10,000. That's 12,000.
Yeah, right there.
50 right there. His boat actually, his whole boat was over $13,000. There's a lot of stuff I haven't got on there.
Mm-hmm.
I could go back and think of it and get it, but she was over $13,000. But he may have paid more than that for his radio, too.
Sure.
I guessed it at $600. He may have a $900, $1,000 radio, which isn't unusual.
Yeah.
I can think of another thing. He had a $150 stove in there.
Mm-hmm.
Little
stove?
Yeah. No, gas stove.
Gas stove.
Really he had a riding sail and a mast about $160 or $70, call it $160.
David?
I don't know what.
Oh, where about that winch? Yeah, is that winch?
The winch, hydraulic. Oh, yeah, that's an item right there. I've got a hydraulic hoist. That's about $700 or $800 for a hydraulic hoist.
That's the time it takes for a whole another dollar itself.
Well, you see, there's 25, 32, 33, 34, 35. That's almost 14,000 right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Over 13,000.
Much more expensive. Yeah.
Average lobster boat wouldn't have the diesel engine. His engine's 3,870, where most average lobster boats, when we're speaking of an average, would have a $1,500 to $1,800 engine, which would be one half of that.
Yeah.
You'd save $1,800 to $2,000.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I could buy a new car with that.
So that brings it back to what I said. Your average lobster boat will still cost you complete around $12,000.
Yeah. Well, that's very good figures. Also gave me a list of all the equipment very, very helpfully there that I hadn't ever
list
made.
List all that out for you.
Well, that's all right. It's all here, taken down in notes.
Oh.
My note taker.
Oh, all right.
That's your thing. Well,
that's
that's what I use it for because it's just essentially...
Yeah.
Taking notes all the time, don't have to worry about it. Now your materials you use? You use red oak for your calson, or your keel, and your frames?
I don't like that word red oak.
I see.
We use main oak.
Main oak, okay. Why don't you like the word red oak? Is that a bad, not favored?
Who ever listens to this tape?
Just me. I use it for notes.
Red oak. Round here, what we call red oak, so called, to the average yachtsman, it's piss oak.
Because it smells like it when it gets wet. Sour.
We do have a red oak,
mm-hmm.
and it is a sour oak. That's why they call it piss oak.
Mm-hmm.
We have just as good a grade of oak as there is in the country. It's not quite as fine grain,
mm-hmm.
but we found through years that. If you watch it, it's just about as good oak, or some say just as good oak. It works a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
It'll soak a little quicker, but it'll dry a little quicker, so therefore it's not apt to rot any quicker.
Yeah.
Your so-called red oak, some people say that's all we have in Maine is red oak. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't white oak. It may be gray oak, or you can call it black oak or green oak if you want to. but it's not, Heather in my estimation, my term, it's not red oak. What most people term as red oak here is sour piss oak. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that can be for two reasons. One is the way it was cut and taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
The place that it was cut, there are some places that's all it does grow.
Mm-hmm.
In certain types of growth, I'm not too sure just where it is. But if you buy a good grade of Maine oak, you may get a little of that in with it, which it still isn't, I wouldn't say that I don't use it.
Yeah.
It's all right, especially if you dry it.
Mm-hmm.
But most of our oak isn't red oak. It's, well, we call it gray oak to sound better, and a lot of people say it is gray oak.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't white oak.
Mm-hmm. And don't have black oak out here?
No.
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 You know, in the Midwest, they use black oak for fence rails. It splits so well.
But a lot of people, I didn't mean to be short with you on that, a lot of people tell about, is that Maine red oak? And I say, no, never used any. All we have is gray oak here in Maine.
Uh-huh.
It sounds better.
Yeah. Good.
And, let's face it, if our lobster boats in the water the year round here will last for 40 and 50 years for that kind of oak, what better do you want?
Sure. Can't ask more than that.
No.
No worries. No, it's no problem. Well, then, for planking, what do you generally use?
The most common, and I think the best, is Maine cedar.
Mm-hmm.
Good grade of Maine cedar, if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
We are using more mahogany now because it's hard to get Maine cedar. To get good Maine cedar.
They swamped out most of the swamps?
It's back more.
Yeah.
It's too expensive to go get it. And cutting cedar is a big gamble.
Mm-hmm.
You might go into a lot and get 100 trees out of it that's perfect quality. And right the next 100 you take, they wouldn't be worth a nickel. They'll be rotten-hatted, rotten knots in them.
Yeah.
It's very inconsistent.
Yeah, my father lucked out on that. He went into a grove one time and cut out enough to build a 40-by-25-foot house that is vertical siding, 2-inch thick.
But I'll tell you a little something about this might be interesting to you. Maine cedar will rot while it's growing.
Yeah.
When you cut it down, it stops rotting, that's the end of it. You can put a rotten plank in a boat or in your house or lay it out in the ground and it can lay almost forever. It'll never rot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's right opposite to any other wood that I know of.
Mm-hmm. That makes a good planking.
It does.
Yeah.
A rotten knot, if it's only started a little place in it, if it doesn't go through, you don't have to worry about it if you don't want to. You usually do bore them, plug them for looks more than anything else, but it won't rot anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask you why.
It would, yeah. I know it makes awful good fence rails.
It's Maine cedar is probably, although it's never been advertised, it's one of the best woods for anything where you don't require a hardwood of any wood there is in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to paint it. It'll stand the weather. But if you do paint it, it'll hold paint much better than any other wood.
Mm-hmm.
It'll dry quicker. It won't absorb water so quick. In fact, it's almost impossible to ever soak a piece of cedar so it'll sink.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be in the water a long, long time to do it.
Yeah.
And when it is soaked, it'll dry out quick.
Yeah.
And it doesn't shrink and swell as much as other woods.
Mm.
It's quite an amazing wood, Maine cedar is, although it never was advertised as such.
Probably you're quite fortunate because of that fact.
What hurts it more than anything else is the fact everybody sees the little knots in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that condemns it. Actually, the small sound knots in a piece of cedar helps it more than it hurts. It makes it that much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It's that much harder.
And do those knots go all the way through?
Sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes they go in just a little way. Cedar knots are an awful funny thing. Many of them go slash. It depends a lot on how the tree's sawed, but even at that, if you look at a limb on a cedar tree, you seldom see limbs come out straight. They usually come up or they'll come down or go all kinds of ways. So you don't know how the knot does go. And it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
A lot of times you see it on one side, it doesn't show on the other side of the board.
Yeah. Hmm. Your brother mentioned that.
I would still use all Maine cedar right today if it was available.
Mm-hmm.
As I would use it if they'd let me, if it wasn't specified otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, you, second to... to cedar, you'd use mahogany? Or is that what you commonly do because people are impressed?
Well, that's what we do because it's the most available. I don't know whether it's better than anything else or not.
Mm-hmm.
Mahogany is a highly overrated piece of wood, I'll tell you right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not half as good as I'll tell you a wood that is I know is better. It's Alaskan cedar, which looks almost like Sitka spruce.
Mm-hmm.
Comes from Vancouver,
yeah.
British Columbia, over that way somewhere. But it's too expensive for us. We can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
Cypress used to be a very common wood. It's heavy and harder. It soaked water bad, that's one thing, but it was a good boat planking, but that's not available now.
Mm-hmm.
Fir is not very good.
Too brittle?
It's too brittle, and it's not too available either.
Mm-hmm.
Mahogany is about the only thing that's not way out of price. That's plenty high, God knows, but it's not so bad as some wood, and there's plenty of it.
How about Sitka spruce, is it?
Oh, no, that's almost out of the question. It's awfully expensive and awful hard to get.
Mm-hmm. How about pine? Is any pine?
We used to use pine a lot. But the trouble with pine, for a work boat, especially for a lobster boat, it soaks and gets awful, awful heavy. Pine will soak water about four times its weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't hold paint good when it does get soaked.
Yes.
You take your fingernail, scrape the paint right off to the wood. Mm-hmm. But they do still use it some, and they used to use it quite a lot.
Well, of course, it was quite available.
Yeah, and of course, yes. It's available now, pine is. But I built, my knowledge, of two boats out of pine,
mm-hmm.
and one to my sorrow. I had to repaint the thing much as 10 times in the next 3 or 4 years. We couldn't make paint stick on it. It wasn't dry
mm-hmm.
when we painted it the first time. And the paint would blister on that boat. And we kept after it. I for about 4 years, I painted that boat every year for the owner for nothing, trying to figure out why. Well, I know why. She was painted green. It wasn't dry enough to start with, and it never did dry out.
Yeah.
And we made the mistake of painting the hull up inside
first. I see.
If we hadn't done that, it would have dried out from inside.
Sure.
A hull shouldn't be painted, really, above the waterline inside. We do it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the hull, it doesn't make much difference
mm-hmm.
because it's dry to start with. But if lumber's a little green to start with and you paint it both sides of it in a boat that way, it never will dry and it'll sweat. The sun will pull the water out through on the outside and blister your paint, you see.
Yeah. My word. Well, let's see. Is cedar, compared to mahogany, still a cheaper wood?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Today's prices, about 20 cents average, 20 cents a board foot for cedar and 45 for mahogany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then, I'm trying to think. If a lobsterman came to you and said, I want to build a 32-foot boat, and I want to do as good a job as I can, but I want to keep the price down. Where would you attempt to keep the price down?
You can't.
You can't. You just tell them you can't do it?
No, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You could cut all the corners you wanted to on one of these average boats, and you might save yourself $100 if you were very careful to cut corners.
Right.
And trying to figure out how to cut them, you'd probably spend more.
Yeah.
They are basically just as simply built as they can be and still be strong
yeah.
and good workmanship, but a conscientious builder wouldn't sacrifice strength for weight even trying to build a lighter boat.
Mm-hmm.
If you lighten some places, you've got to make something else a little heavier to offset it, so you
So you end up
the only thing you can do if somebody wants a light constructed boat, you don't save much money.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, very little. You use a smaller keel, smaller frames, lighter plank, mm-hmm. lighter clamps, lighter deck frame.
Mm-hmm.
Where we'd use half-inch plywood on the cabin tops, use 3/8.
Yep.
Which is a small item, we put on 5 coats of fiberglass. You can get by with 3.
Mm-hmm.
You save about 25
deck.
Pounds there.
Yeah.
You can lighten one up a lot. Build it out of cedar instead of mahogany. You save a pile of weight there.
Yeah.
Mahogany weighs much more than the cedar.
Yeah.
You space your frames 12 inches on centers instead of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally. In other words, you can do it.
You can light them up.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't save
any money.
It's just about as much work to put that light stuff together. It's just a little bit heavier.
Yeah.
So you're not saving very much money. You'd have to cut corners like hell to save, to cheapen one of these boats. Unless we wanted to do like Nova Scotia does, but we couldn't do it. They won't let us build.
Uh-huh.
We could build one of the same type of construction as Nova Scotia does, and hell, you can cut the cost of one of these boats a third.
Mm-hmm.
But they wouldn't let us do it. They'd put us. They'd run you out of town if we built one like here around here that way. They'll buy them, think they're all right.
Uh-huh.
We build them that way. That'd be the last boat we ever built.
Yeah. They'd run you out of town for building a killer boat or something like that.
Well, to build something so cheap and so poor as that, you never get another job.
Yeah. Man's reputation is at stake.
They it's just amazing how they cut corners. Because it shows the boats after a little bit of age, but a lot of people buy them don't know it. They think, well, geez, all boats supposed to go to hell that way. They don't know the difference, see, because they never had anything else.
Jeez.
They'll use softwood frames, little small fastenings, they don't fit anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't bed anything in paint or any kind of compound. They just half. They never use a screw. They just drive nails in to hold anything together. And oh my God, it's. I've done repair work on lots of them, and it's just unbelievable. If we could build them that way, yes, I could take one of these $12,000 boats for about $8,000 with the same equipment in it.
She'd cost that man who owned her in 5 years' time about as much.
But they still buy them, because the reason they buy them is because it's the first cost.
Yes.
That's all they think about, is the first cost. They say, well, I get this prep by the time she's gone, I might have to get another one, get something better. But sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
There aren't too many of them ever buy the second one, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many of them.
You never go down and get an Obie boat.
Oh, they'll get one to get started. A lot of them do.
Uh-huh.
It's cheap. There's cheaper for them to get started, isn't they? They're good for 5, 6, 7, 8 years before they get to bother them too bad.
Yeah. So there will be some Obie boats around here, which were men's first boats.
Yeah. You'll see quite a few Obie boats around. Some of them are quite old, too. Some of them have been passed on from the first guy to somebody else that's just started, and he's bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can buy it cheap.
Yeah.
From that guy.
Now, I suppose your choice in what you want in a boat is sort of a condition of affluence. As soon as you get wealthy enough to choose what you want for a boat, then you get a better boat.
They never go back and get the second one if they... No. If they've made money enough, if they're good fishermen, they made any money, they never go back to the second one.
Yeah.
I say never.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, sir. Let me ask you... How are you doing, by the way? You're plenty of steam?
Yeah.
Yep, you all right? Perhaps I don't want to carry you too much longer. I want to ask you about basic innovations that you have made or have... Oh, yeah, that you have made yourself as a builder on your earlier model. Can you name anything in particular?
Lots of little things we've improved on, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
And changed. In the general shape of the hull, the biggest change has been in the way they're planked and the way the backbone structure, your shaft log and horn timber and that pattern is put together. The first ones, they used to just drift bolt together.
Mm-hmm.
Any old way you could. You'd drift one piece on, then drift another piece on, then your shaft log, you'd drift down by the hole just into the piece below. And it wasn't bad because by the time the timbers went down and the plank went all on, they still would last pretty well unless they got ashore or something, get a bad banging. Sometimes they come apart.
Yeah.
But now we don't do that. We through bolt. Nut and bolt, nuts each end, straight through everything.
Yes.
Which is a lot better if you ever do have to repair it. If you don't drive those bolts out and replace them.
Replace your shaft log or...
We don't use drift bolts anywhere in the deadwood now. One thing
the old boat's the stern post where you fasten your stepping box to outside bearing.
Yeah.
Used to be drifted in. Uh-huh. Now we through ball them. They're removable and replaceable. The mm-hmm. old ones, you could replace them, but it was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Get those old bolts out. Sometimes you couldn't. You'd tar them off and have to try to get new ones and buy them and so
yeah.
forth.
Yeah.
Then the method of planking in the bolts, the other biggest change that we've made, that I have made, the old style bolts take a section right abreast the shaft log.
Mm-hmm.
They came down, came in, and they had what we called a square tock. Here was your... are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah.
All right. We used to have to bend those timbers down and get over that, so consequently yes. they all broke right in here after sure. about 10 years.
Sure.
Well, I think I was the first one around here that ever did start to change on that. After I'd built about 3 boats, I figured out there was no reason why you still couldn't come out with the easier round.
Yes.
You might lose a little, and this was a big argument at that time, and it is a little bit true. This made more turbulent water go to your propeller.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you didn't get such a free flow of water back to your propeller with this type of construction as you did with a square tock. But this is so much stronger, and my boats... I'm not the only one who does it now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess most builders do it now. But this, you never have any problems here now.
Mm-hmm.
You can even replace these plank in here, where the old ones, this was the first thing that always played out. These timbers broke off.
Yeah.
This these seams right in here in your plank all opened up.
Yeah.
And to replace a plank, to replace one, you had to start and replace them all up by mm-hmm. that. You get out because the seams were bigger in, the plank was bigger inside than it was outside,
sure.
so you couldn't get them out or in again.
Sure.
Well, with that type of construction now, it's so near the same, because
yes.
it's a very moderate turn in here.
Yes.
You can replace them. These timbers don't break off. Grounding your bolt out, you can see if you ground her out on the keel here, that square tuck, all
yes.
that weight pushing down had a tendency for these to drop down anyway
sure.
and break them off. The more you come down this way, the more it's bracing, stronger.
Yes, like a regular triangle. Right?
That is the biggest change, probably, that we've made in the models of any bolts right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because other than that, other than the exception that we do build them maybe a little wider than we did in those days, the basic shape of the hull is almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
We've changed very, very little in the last 25 years.
Have you added much to the flare?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. That's all up to the owner. A lot of owners don't want that flare.
Uh-huh.
I'll explain that again to you. That's a case of visibility.
Yeah.
You get a boat that's way blunt forward with a lot of flare,
yeah.
they can't see out over the sides so good. So a lot of them will sacrifice that and have the boat narrower so they can mm-hmm. see down closer by the side of it.
So the flare isn't necessarily related to your medium full entrance?
That has no bearing on it at all. Actually, the flare on that boat, whether it's got a concave off flare, other than the looks of it, has very little bearing on the boat in any way, shape, or manner.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make them any drier, because when you're driving them, that's why the water comes over them.
Yes.
It comes over them way back in the middle of them.
Sure, sure.
Laying right still in a heavy chop, they put their bow down,
yep.
which I have seen, and go pretty well down. Sometimes that will throw the water off a little bit instead of it coming on deck, but
yep.
laying right still if it comes on deck, then if you're not going ahead, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, yep.
Most fishermen pay no attention to that at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's more of a pleasure boat type thing.
It makes a boat look nicer. It's
part of the prettiness.
I like it. I like to look. I like listen. I don't like doing it. It's hard to do it, but it does make a boat look nicer. If you notice, this one we're building here now has got a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my own idea. I did it because I wanted to,
uh-huh.
and I knew what it was going to cost, but I figured it. So
yeah, yeah. You're all set.
It isn't doing any good.
Yeah. Is that part of the Raymond Bunkers thing? Is a flare? Just out of curiosity, this is
no matter. No, he's about average, I think.
About average.
Okay. He's about the same.
Yeah. You know, it looks like he has almost an S shear.
Well.
Sometimes.
He's inclined to do that a little bit.
Uh-huh. Was that something that Chester Clements might have done?
No. He comes up forward, and what makes that look that way? He's inclined
to run when he gets up here forward, to run his boat straight here where most of us keeps a gradual curl going up. That gives you the illusion, standing down here looking up on it. It gives you this effect.
Yes.
But it really isn't. If you was level abreast, it would be true, except it would be a little straight here.
Uh-huh.
It would be true up to here, but it still wouldn't be rounding down, still going up.
Mm-hmm.
You stand down here on the floor certain ways. You look at that one now, and you swear she's up that way, too. But she actually isn't.
Yeah.
No, generally speaking, his boats have a good shear, but he does, he is inclined to go straight with them forward here, where I'm not. I'm inclined to keep a truer shear running right up instead of running it off straighter.
Yeah, an even curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just simply a matter of opinion, whether you like it or it's no better, no worse.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, I suppose oftentimes a man will choose one thing over another simply to distinct it.
Yeah.
So people recognize
it. Now, Chester Clements, by the way, you get back to that, was noted for putting beautiful shears on all his boats, and he always did.
Hmm.
And I wouldn't say that Raymond Bunker's are not beautiful shears on his boats, too. They're good shears, only he's used some of his own ideas and changed it slightly from what Chester Clements did.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned, of course, from Chester Clements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His boats, by the way, if you want my honest opinion, I hope Raymond don't hear this recorded.
No, he won't.
Don't hold a candle to the boats that Chester Clements built.
Mm-hmm.
Chester Clements had good model boats. I don't claim Raymond's boats are anything exceptionally good for models. They're just as good as mine. They're just as good as the average.
Mm-hmm.
Chester Clements had a little something the rest of us haven't never had around here. I don't know what.
It was just a sense of beauty.
It was in here. It was in his eye.
Yeah. Remarkable. Are there any of his boats still around?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few. Mm. Yeah. I say quite a few. There's several.
Yeah. I know, maybe one good thing I ought to do perhaps would be to, just for the fun of it, take some pictures of the harbor, Sawatch Harbor and Bass Harbor, and come trotting by with the pictures once they're developed, and ask them if you can spot out whose boats are which.
Who's doing?
Just for an idea of what the average run of the harbor was like.
Yeah.
Would be possible thing.
I spent so little time down around there now. I don't know if I could anyway, but one long ago I could tell you who belonged to every boat and when it was built in the age of it. But I probably couldn't now. In fact, a lot of them have been built. I haven't built very many work boats in the last 10 or 15 years anyway. Most of mine have been pleasure boats.
That's an interesting development. I noticed your brother Ron has been doing quite a bit of pleasure boat building too.
Well, the first of it, we built almost all together work boats around here. Grace, this harbor was full of mine, and Cranberry Island, Southwest Harbor, everywhere.
Yeah.
But we got more into pleasure boat stuff, and you take one of these, we say a $12,000 lobster boat, you spend just a little bit more on it, you can make it a $20,000 pleasure boat and get a lot more money out of it.
Yeah. Finish out the cabin more and this sort of thing. Yeah.
And sell a lot more equipment for it and so forth. So we stick to the pleasure boats all we can for that reason. It isn't that we don't want to build. I'd rather, the way things are right now, materials I had to get, I'd much rather build a lobster boat because they don't require very much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can make shift in a lobster boat if you haven't got a set of window brackets. Open the window, the hell that you make one out of wood.
Yeah.
And it'll get a buy.
Yeah.
A good pleasure boat, you couldn't do that. You'd be laughed at.
Yeah, very good.
It'd be much better right now to build lobster boats.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I suppose like everybody else, they're short of money too.
Yeah.
And I guess lobster has been slowing up a bit, hasn't it? Lately?
Well, a little. Of course, the weather, it's always slack in the winter anyway. The weather's bad, but there's predictions that we're going to have a recession in the lobster business. It goes in cycles, and they say the cycle starts this year again.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be going downhill for a while, but I don't know whether that's true or not.
Mm-hmm. Somebody just went down by the house over there. Yeah. Well, just out of curiosity, this is something I've not ever asked anybody yet, and that is, what do you think is going to happen to wooden lobster boat building in the next 10, 15 years?
Oh, I don't think anything. You're going to find more fiberglass boats come in. There's always going to be demand for lobster boats. The problem, what may happen is you may not find anybody to build them.
Mm-hmm.
Because labor's getting so bad. Nobody's learning the trade anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, your son is the youngest man I've seen around here.
Yeah, and I think if something happened to me right now, he'd quit it in a wink. He doesn't like it either. It's a hard way to make money, I'll tell you. You put in a lot of time, a lot of labor for small wages. It's a little better now because we're sticking more to pleasure boats, and by having fewer builders, there are a few getting out of it all the time, one reason or another. We're getting our prices up again now so that we can pay a little bit more and we don't have so much competition. And it's a little bit that way, of course, in your lobster boats. But once was a time I built, God, I built dozens and dozens of these lobster boats. If I $200 clear of my expenses on the boat, why, I was doing well. I built lots of them and didn't get anything but my wages out. And sometimes I lost on that. Something went wrong. Competition's keen.
Yeah.
If you did it, you had to do it for nothing, that's all.
Yeah.
But
got your wages and no profit at all. Yeah.
I'm not sold that fiberglass is going to be the answer to wood boat. I think eventually you're going to see something altogether different. It may be a plastic, it may be metal. But eventually, there'll be few wood boats built. There'll always, in our time, be some.
Yeah.
Because there's always going to be a few fellows to do it.
Yeah.
And there's always a few fellows that want wood boats. A real yachtsman today, a real old timer that loves boats wants a wood boat today.
Yes. Don't have to be an old timer to love wood.
No,
even,
that's true.
Yeah, you know.
You'll always see wood boats built as long as there's somebody to build them.
Yeah. The question is how much longer will there be somebody to build them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I first started, it wasn't hard at all to hire 15 young fellows right around this town here. This is a town of 1,200 population, 1,500. Mm-hmm. It wasn't hard to hire 15 nice boat captains to work for you. They ain't 15 in the whole town now.
Yeah.
There ain't six in the whole town.
Yeah. And look at the young men too. The young.
I've got one. Old. I've got one in the whole town. My son. That's a boat builder.
Yeah.
Now there may be one or two more. I don't know. Yes, I do know one more.
Over to Hankley's?
There's a fellow across the harbor here that works on his own. Part of the time. He's not tops, but he's good. All right. Life of Stanley. Of course, Tim Davis was good in his day, but he's gone by. That's it. Nobody will take his place over.
Yeah.
And when he's done, that's it. In fact, he's done anyway. He sold it. But not for a boatyard. Raymond Munker's all done this year, I understand. He's not going to build anymore.
Ralph, too?
Yeah, I understand that both of them are all done. They're not going to build anymore.
I didn't know that.
Southwest Boat Corporation doesn't build any. One once in a while.
Yeah.
It'll only be a short time. They won't build any.
Yeah.
Hinkley builds no wood boats. I'm the only builder on this side of the island. I don't know. Johnny Cochran, I guess, over to Hull's Cove. Maybe building, I don't know.
There's Ralph Stanley, I guess.
Ralph Stanley's building.
And your brother.
And my brother, yeah.
Oh.
That's right. I said I was the only one.
Well, still, you know, most of the builders are over 50.
There's no young fellows picking it up at all. None. You can't get them interested in it. It takes too long to learn it. While they're working for $2 an hour learning it, they can go out and mow lawns for $3 an hour, work when they want to, quit when they want to. I tried an apprenticeship training program here. It fizzled before it started almost.
They just weren't getting enough out of it to stick with it.
It cost me more than it was worth.
And
all the fellows you hired, they were just, the minute that job was done,
bingo.
They were done. As soon as they got their first paycheck, that was it. You didn't see them again.
Yeah. I talked to a bookbinder, of all things, out in Indiana. He's an old man, and he couldn't find a man to apprentice.
Is that right?
And he said it took half of his time showing him what to do.
Yeah.
And he couldn't get his work done.
Yeah.
And he was under a lot of pressure to do his work. And so there he was, the same situation with Dale.
Well, that's that problem. If you hire a greenhorn until he's, for the first 6 months or so, you know you've lost the use of another man just teaching him, showing him.
This interview continues on tape 70.6.